Now it's time for another edition of our series, Enlighten Me. And for that, let's kick things over to NPR's Rachel Martin.
I've got this small pile of rocks on my desk. They're smooth stones that I've picked up during vacations to various beaches over the years. For me, the stones are a reminder of things that are bigger than whatever daily stress is eating away at my psyche. A reminder that despite the chaos and trauma in this life, in this world, at this moment, it's all still ephemeral. The rocks stay. On top of this small assortment of rocks is a relatively new addition. It's a gold-plated medallion, about the size of a quarter. On one side, there's an engraved image of mushrooms and a kind of blessing. May you remain aware of awareness. A scientist named Roland Griffiths gave that medallion to me. He and I talked back in April of this year as one of the first conversations in this series. Griffiths had spent the later stage of his career exploring the ways that psychedelic drugs, specifically psilocybin, could help patients with depression, addiction issues, and even terminal cancer. Then 2 years ago, he himself was diagnosed with stage 4 colon cancer. The doctor was now the patient, and Griffiths was facing his own mortality. I was changed by the conversation I had with him. First of all, he was the person who finally convinced me to delve more deeply into meditation. It's a practice he credits with helping him navigate the closing chapter of his life. And that's the part that really struck me, how Griffiths was able to sit with his dying, or rather sit in his last months of living, and let go of any fear or despair.
For me, the diagnosis, as unlikely as it seems, has been a call to celebration.
Roland Griffiths died a few weeks ago at the age of 77. So today we're revisiting my conversation with him from earlier this year. We started by talking about when Griffiths was at the top of his field of psychopharmacology. He was known for studying the risks of mood-altering drugs and sleeping medication. But then he really got into meditation, and that led him to ask some big questions about the spiritual powers of our minds.
It felt almost like a midlife crisis of sorts, because I became disinterested or much less interested in what I was known for, what I was being paid to do. I'm at Johns Hopkins among first-class scientists, most of whom are very reductionistic, called a materialistic worldview. And I remember going to some meetings and people say, well, what's up? And I said, oh, you know, I've gotten really interested in meditation. And I'd start to say something and their eyes would glaze over and like that. It couldn't be less interesting to them.
Was that disheartening to you? Because you ultimately needed kind of their peer support.
Well, that I wasn't going to get it there.
So you started working a lot with psilocybin. Can you explain in layman's terms what that is?
Yeah. So psilocybin is one of these classic psychedelic drugs. This comes from psilocybin containing mushrooms, and psilocybin's been used hundreds to thousands of years with indigenous cultures for these ceremonial healings or sacramental or religious kinds of experiences. Yeah. You know,
trips. Do you say that? Do you use the expression trips?
Trip? No.
Oh, you don't. Okay.
No. Because it just has all of that association, the baggage from the 1960s.
That was not your scene.
That was absolutely not my scene. Yeah.
What do you call it? Experience?
Yeah, I would call it an experience. Yeah, a psychedelic experience. Yeah.
Okay. You were running these trials explicitly on cancer patients at some point to see how the psilocybin, the psychedelics, would affect them.
That, in fact, was our first therapeutic trial that we ran with psychedelics. And I can tell you where I sat with that, and that was feeling very cautious about what would an experience of this sort do to someone who's facing the most significant existential threat that they can, and that is their own demise. And As it turns out, the effects were nothing short of astonishing. In this cohort of people who met criteria for clinically significant depression or anxiety, with a single dose of psilocybin under these kinds of supported conditions, anxiety and depression dropped immediately and markedly. And enduringly. That was the most important feature. So in that study, we followed people up at 6 months, and they remained with very low symptom profiles.
Can you articulate what they said to you about how did that alleviate their anxiety?
I do recall one man who had the psilocybin experience and came to, I'm now hesitant to give this example, but I will. He came to believe in the reality of God. But what was so interesting is that this changed his whole frame of reference. He was in considerable pain, and that pain receded in importance. But I think what was most moving about that is there was something about the change in the very nature of his being that was absolutely inspiring and awe-taking to his caretakers. And it wasn't that he was filled with spiritual language, God's going to save me. No, it was an acceptance for his condition and a reassurance to the people he loved most that everything was okay. Everything was as it should be. And they felt uplifted by that.
If I may ask, why were you reticent to share that example?
It's the God language.
Well, we're all sort of limited by our language, right? Maybe some people use the word God because we don't know what other words to ascribe to these certain kind of ideas or experiences.
I think that's precisely it. I mean, for me personally, we live in the midst of this astonishing mystery, and we don't have a coherent scientific explanation of what's going on. The thing that we understand best about our experience of sentience is that we are aware that we're aware, and that we do have an interiority, and it's only uniquely us as the individual who's experiencing that that can affirm that.
You have found yourself on the other side of this whole thing as someone who is contemplating these very existential questions with new urgency.
Yeah. I went in for a screening colonoscopy, thinking myself to be completely healthy, taking very good care of myself, and coming out with, as it turns out, a stage 4 cancer colon diagnosis. And so that's... that's led me into this deep contemplation about what's going on here. And I think I've been served very well by my long-term practice of meditation, being able to call out and see where my mind is going and see rabbit holes of dark emotions or thoughts that would surely bring on nothing but misery were I to inhabit them, be them fear, anxiety, denial, resentment. I mean, there's a depression, there are any number of ways one could go that would be nothing but miserable. But for me, the diagnosis, as unlikely as it seems, has been a call to celebration. And my wife and I have been in that mode in spite of multiple surgeries and all of the potentially unpleasant occurrences that emerge from treatment through the medical system and the chemotherapy and and stuff like that.
It's a hard reality. It's like a duality to try to, we get wrapped up in the in like war language with cancer, but on the one hand, fight the cancer, right? And do the surgeries and the treatments, but then accepting the cancer at the same time. Do those two things feel in conflict for you?
Not at all. Yeah. So the very first time I went into chemotherapy, I got a text message from my daughter, whom I love very much. And she writes, "Dad, kick cancer's ass." and that's the fight mode, right? And that, or depression, anxiety, or fear, I mean, I've chosen, that's not where I want to live. I don't want to be in battle with my body. Yeah. And I don't want to be in fear or anxiety or denial or resentment. I mean, why?
Do you plan to take psilocybin at any point?
No, I actually didn't want to touch a psychedelic because I was concerned it would somehow alter the state I was
sabotage in. this very healthy, appreciative mental clarity you had.
Yeah, right. Huh. And so there actually came a point where I thought, I wonder if I'm defending against something here. I wonder if my reason for refusing to take a psychedelic is that I'm masking something over, that there's a skeleton in my closet here, and I'm saying I'm joyful and I have all this equipoise and everything is beautiful, you know. So I decided, okay, so I'll take a dose of psychedelic and do that very inquiry.
Yeah.
It was LSD. And
how'd it go?
Fantastic.
Did it?
Yeah. I address the cancer as other. And in general, I don't think it's wise to reify anything in mind as anything other than an object of mind. But in this case, I addressed the cancer itself and said, okay, what's going on here? And the answer, there was no answer, actually. Cancer didn't
talk back. Cancer
didn't say a thing. And so then I got into dialogue and said, well, you know, I've considered you a blessing. I actually really respect everything that's occurred to me since this diagnosis, you know, and I truly am grateful for the diagnosis. I said, but do you have to kill me?
Whoa.
And
was there an answer to that one?
Yeah. The answer was, you're going to die. But this is as it should be. There's a deeper meaning. There's a deeper purpose to this. And you should continue to do exactly what you're doing. And I felt implied by that I should speak out more broadly about what I was going through. Because I'd been reluctant to do so. I'd done some. Then I said, now I'm talking to cancer. I said, but okay, so I have something to say here. How about giving me some more time?
I like that you went for the follow-up. I like that you pressed.
I went to the follow-up.
I mean, how many times do you get the opportunity?
Yeah. But I got radio silence. It didn't answer.
No.
But that was...